Chapter 6. From Passion to Poverty. Passion is a frightening thing because if you have passion, you don't know where it will take you. Krishnamurti. The Doggy Cookie Company gave Ash and Indira a chance to reconstruct their relationship. They were spending together time again, enjoying the companionship, working side by side in the warehouse used as a kitchen and office, making love and chatting, though mostly discussing ways to get back to the United States where they felt more comfortable and alive. Human beings tend to outgrow their environment, so in this respect, they were no different. Besides, the itch to be self-sufficient like before was a big motivating factor. In the United States, they would surely start a family, grooming their future children to well-being and a bright future. The return to London had run its course. The excruciatingly difficult times had ended, but only after a sort of miracle or gift bestowed upon them by Indira's mother. Well before Ash started the cookie business, the doggy carrot tart, and just as Indira recovered her health, Mother sent her yet another box of goodies from India, a box that Indira for some reason never bothered to open. The instructions inside, written in Sanskrit, called for Indira to light the candles to help you recover your life. Mother went on to explain that she had spoken to a monastery of priests to pray daily for Ash and Indira, and that the candles were part of the path to regaining their soul freedom. Apparently, Indira's mother thought her daughter's soul was trapped and thus not free. Therefore, the prayers and candles. One afternoon, while sharing a plate of delicious Mumbai-style rice, the phone rang. Ash quickly answered, intending to hang up the phone immediately, but hearing his in-law's voice, handed the phone over to Indira.
"Have you lighted the candles I sent you?"
"Why do you ask, Mother?"
"Light the candles. We are praying for you."
"But, Mother..."
"You will see results soon, I promise."
The phone went dead, and Indira returned to eating. Ash didn't ask questions, and Indira offered no information. That night, she returned home to open the box from Mom and lit the candles for good effect. She left them that way and forgot about them. If prayers were being chanted for them back home, she would see the results, as her mother said. Ash finally asked her one day about the candles.
"Mother asked priests to pray for us that we may free our souls."
Ash stopped to consider, wanting to weep. He would meditate his way to soul freedom, Indira by his side. He believed his passion in all things India was growing, and the scriptures were a path to a new beginning. As he knew Indira to be of a great spiritual background, as raised by her zealot mother, Ash knew she would do her part. Indira would. In this way, the couple working together to land a new plane in life. The cookie factory had taken him away from acting on his plan to use spirituality as a new profession. How do you make money off of spirituality, after all? Cookies sell. Spiritual growth is a daily activity. It will still be there when I'm ready to further develop it, he said to no one in particular, in this way justifying the delay of his spiritual growth. Rock Anderson was growing. He married a beautiful girl from Southern California, a sunny, smiling type who cheered up his life in moments of hardship. Rock once felt lonely, having handed his life over to work, a pattern that soon became boring and in need of a little lift in order to keep going. Now Cindy, he believed, would round out his life. Together they would enjoy his money and all the accoutrements that accompanied it. The luxury cars, travel, great hotels and vacations, the best clothes, jewelry, all in all, a high-maintenance girl's dream come true. Like Indira Jeffrey, Cindy would not have to work, but instead simply enjoy the socialite life offered her. Trophies must be kept shiny, else they lose their gloss, and so Rock's new wife went about burning through his fortune any way she saw fit. Because she had free rein, her husband thought the money would last forever. He was a committed, nice guy so all was good. Cindy was the type of woman who used her beauty and sophistication to lure men. But Rock hardly knew this. Though good with people and a self-confessed people person, he lacked the killer instinct to notice he was being taken advantage of. So, gorgeous Cindy proceeded to take advantage of the situation, planning on living with him for 2 years under California law, so to earn her deserved 50% divorce settlement and leave, cash in pocket, freedom assured, with enough to start anew with her equally deceiving bevy of Orange County girlfriends. It was a well-designed plan, as it worked for other girlfriends, so at minimum, it would work for Cindy, too. Cindy took the girls out to lunch, bought expensive presents to assure being well-liked, essentially buying friendships she felt she didn't deserve, plotting all along to do as she pleased, complaining when Rock did or said things she didn't like, threatening to leave him by saying, "I can have any man I want." She could land in someone else's arms in a jiffy, that is for certain, yet staying until the time came to file the papers was her best bet. Rock never knew what hit him until the shit hit the fan. One Monday morning after Cindy spent the weekend at her best girlfriend's house without telling Rock, a man came to the office and served him papers. In the middle of a business transaction, he read her complaints that included falsities such as domestic abuse and rape allegations. How do you rape your wife? Accusations trumped up to demean him before the judge. Such serious charges that Rock felt deflated like never before. The act of deception is one thing, but if she were sleeping with other men, it was almost acceptable given their distant relationship during the last few months. But to assault a man who has given you everything for 2 years and throw him to the wolves was the last straw. Rock put up with her antics, planning to divorce her at some point in the future, believing she would change, yet putting it off because he did not want to leave the relationship until it was absolutely necessary. Well, as a result of delaying a much-needed change in his life and seeing an attorney, the change was forced down his throat, leaving him with a feeling of disappointment, anger, and that of being duped. If you've been duped in life, you know the feeling. If you've not been duped by a woman, well, all the better for you. But Cindy's betrayal made Rock feel like tearing down the walls around him, crash his car, go to the batting cage and hit the ball over and over again with his old Louisville slugger. Of course, being the kind and gentle man he was known to be, he discarded the options in exchange for a phone call to his attorney. "She is not getting 50%. No way, Jose," he told his lawyer. "Hire an investigator because I suspect she has committed adultery." Having spent the weekend in Malibu with her best girlfriend, they must have had an orgy at minimum. Malibu was known for that, and as Rock recalled, Cindy's girlfriend surrounded herself with up-and-coming actors from Hollywood, good-looking sorts with time to spare out on the beach for a meaningful tan. If he could prove his case, Cindy would be out of a small fortune, without a house, and he would take back the luxury car of her dreams. The only problem is, she protected herself by demanding he move out. She took possession of his life, deceitfully, and it hurt. A local judge held a quick hearing, ordering Rock to find a new place to live until the case was settled. The case was set for June 1st, a mere 7 months away, as Thanksgiving Day was to be celebrated next week. Cindy won that round, paying her attorney with Rock's money. That day, Rock took time from work to cancel every single bill he had under his name attached to the house, including Pacific Gas and Electric, the phone lines, the cable service, gardening services, and the pool guy, too, who he didn't want to see have Cindy in bed, if he hadn't already. As for the luxury car, he called the agency with the news they could repossess the car within the next hour, as he would not be paying the monthly bill. "To hell with my credit," he said, knowing he would later recuperate his good standing through his attorney, no matter the cost. This was not war, not like the legendary Jeffries War. This was business. Rock had, long ago, taken to using the familiar quote from The Godfather, as said by Marlon Brando,
"It's not personal, it's business."
Well, business it was. Soon enough, Cindy was calling the office from a telephone booth, threatening to kill Rock if he didn't give her an allowance.
"We're still married. You owe me."
"Like hell," he replied, hanging the phone. Another time, Cindy called with a serious threat.
"I will have you killed."
A boy genius in the company promptly recorded her phone threats for posterity. When June came, the house looked like hell. The weeds overgrown, the walls in the garage smashed in with what looked like a crowbar, the pool dirty, with the living room curtains smelling of cigarette and marijuana smoke. With Cindy finally gone, Rock immediately hired a contractor to fix the house and put it up for sale. He would never live in that house again, nor would he hear a word from Cindy, who apparently left town with her small settlement of $500,000 after the judge heard the tapes and tales of her adulterous adventures and threats. Never mind that she lied through her teeth to try and get the best of Rock, she also made every attempt to demean him in front of those present in the courtroom, although to no avail. Rock spent close to $100,000 in legal fees, a hefty but recoverable amount to pay for his freedom. Now he returned to work, wondering just where he went wrong. "I trusted her, I guess," was his answer. And then just as quickly as the judge hit the gavel, he forgot her forever and moved on. The doggy cookie business went kaput after 18 months. Ash and Indira were devastated. It was time to tighten the belt and start all over again, once more. "How many times will I have to get up from the ground and dust myself off?" Indira looked at her husband without saying a word. Deep inside, she had the answer, but because Ash had not truly listened to her advice, she let it go. It was as if life were an instant replay, a reminder of the disaster in Chicago when he did not take her advice to take the partnership. Indira knew Ash needed to listen, but did he? Life would work out. It always did. As he scrambled to put his finances in order, or should one say, take inventory of his finances in order to plan his short-term goals, of which he had none as the business closure came unexpectedly, Ash saw that he saved enough to get started elsewhere, as his time was up at the elder Jeffrey's home. How he knew it was up, it was anyone's guess. But his gut told him it's time to leave Mommy and Daddy. Indira agreed. Together, they strolled down the street, looking for a flat big enough for the two. They felt good about having their privacy once again, the peace they so valued, and an unspoken, productive respect for silence without thinking something is wrong here. Ash could work all he wanted, study and research, read and smoke the occasional cigarette, a habit he recently took up for no reason at all, but a habit that calmed his nerves. Indira would bake scrumptious desserts and tasty dinners and read the most recent romance bestsellers for fun. All was fine as long as they stayed by each other's side, chatting and discussing the future as a dream. Indira would not get pregnant until their situation improved. That afternoon, there were no flats available in the area, so after a cup of tea at their favorite shop, they returned home refreshed and willing to tell the Jeffreys it was time to move on. When they got home, mother-in-law called out to them.
"Oh, Ashley,"
she called from somewhere in the house after hearing them enter.
"I have a message from America."
Ash froze. What could have happened? Did someone die? Am I in trouble? Walking into the kitchen, his mother gave him a number to call, written on a piece of yellow paper.
"He said, call immediately, no matter the hour."
Ash did not recognize the number, but he dialed it anyway.
"Mr. Jeffrey?"
the voice was heard to say.
"Yes, sir. This is Mr. Ash Jeffrey. How may I help you?"
"Mr. Jeffrey, your name was brought to our attention as a result of your brilliant work in Chicago." Ash stiffened to hear of the past.
We wish to bring you back to America to work for us. We have an opening that must be filled immediately, and as your work is proven, we want you to transition to the computer industry. Engineers like you do not grow on trees." Ash dropped the phone. Indira shook her head as if someone had died. Mother-in-law clasped her hands in prayer. The man's voice could be heard bouncing on the kitchen floor. "Hello? Hello?" Ash picked up the phone and responded. "I am here, sir. I apologize." "Yes, well, we have a scheduled flight for you and your wife in 3 days. We have secured a beautiful house for you in the hilltop section of San Diego. The day after you arrive, it's going to be all work and little play. A messenger will deliver all the details about our company, as well as all pertinent information. Oh, and we have already secured your visas." "Thank you, sir. I don't know what to say. But yes, I accept," Ash responded, unable to grasp the suddenness of a life change. "Sir, did I get your name?"
"I'm sorry, Ash. My name is Samuel Palmisano. I'm the president of IBM.
After hanging up the phone, Indira was the first to ask who was on the phone. But Ash simply said, "Oh, just a bill collector." Mother went next.
"Why did you drop the phone? Are you deep in debt?"
Ash nodded and plunged onto the chair. The two women exchanged looks and continued with their conversation. The next day, Ash excused himself from the dinner table and walked out the door without his coat, though he did grab a wool scarf. He headed downtown with quick steps, as he did not want to be late for the appointment. Although he was leaving London, he had not shared with anyone that he'd begun an apprenticeship with a Hindu holy man, and it was now time to part.
"Life is like that, Ash. It changes from one day to the other. Happy today, tomorrow sorrow. What is important is to understand the force responsible for that change."
Ash straightened his back. The holy man had used the word force, the very expression that gave him a boost, inspiring him spiritually as a youngster. Unable to process the latest 24 hours, Ash said goodbye. But first, he had one last question for the holy man.
"Why do things work out at the last minute? It is as if I were at the cliff's edge, ready to jump to my death in desperation, when all of a sudden, a phone call from America."
"Look at that question, and the answer will lead to your destiny." When Ash got home, he rushed into the bedroom and grabbed pen and paper. He quietly scribbled the holy man's answer and put it away in the drawer. Ash would not understand the holy man's answer for several years, during which time he would forget to seek the answer and discard the question altogether in order to concentrate on making money at IBM. He did know, however, that he was yet to reach his destiny, but what mattered most at the moment was straightening out his life right now. Ash doubted San Diego would work out, so after the phone call yesterday, he did not share the news with his family. Indira was kept in the dark, until on the way home from seeing the holy man, Ash stopped at a phone and dialed. It was time to tell. They all needed the surprise.
"Indira, are you standing?
Sit down. I have something to tell you." A few years passed, with Ash Jeffrey grateful to return to the United States, happy his wife gave him two daughters. Devanshi, meaning divine in Hindu, was the oldest, and the younger Divya, whose name means heavenly. The days passed until Ash began to get bored, feeling there was still something else out there for him. But what that was, he did not know. He thought of unveiling the question of the force behind sudden change. Why do things work out at the last minute? His comfort in life did not allow him to seek the answer deeply, because while comfort is a beautiful thing, it does force us into a stale void. Ash thought in those days that to seek was a momentary thing, something one does only when necessary, instead of understanding that seeking is a rigid and daily discipline, a forceful habit, a second nature, ultimately leading to enlightenment. Through the years, he revisited the question, letting it disappear into the thin air, the way a helium balloon soars through the sky. One Monday morning, a colleague at work entered the office with a never-before-seen glow on his face. After greeting everyone and carrying a smile this big, he left an impression that he was either in love or he had won the lottery. During the morning coffee break, an employee approached him.
"So, what's new? I've never seen you like this before."
"Let's have lunch. I'll explain," he replied. Turning in the direction of Ash's office, his supervisor, he shouted, "Ash, you're invited to lunch. I'm buying." It turned out the employee spent the weekend in a seminar that changed his life, and now he was eager to share. His life was a mess 3 days ago, so guess what? It was a mess no more. The seminar was so powerful that he let go of the past and was now living in the present. He had big plans in mind. He would change his life soon, at last doing what he always wanted to do in life, and that was to buy a house and fix it up. Although it didn't seem like much of a life change at the moment, he would do this with house after house and make a bundle until it was time for the next thing. In the seminar, he discovered that he had repressed doing what was in his heart, his passion in life, and that now was the time to dive into it and be happy. "I want that," Ash said, "but I have responsibilities." "We all have those. Come to the seminar tomorrow night and you'll get a taste of this." The seminar proved to be a stepping stone for Ash Jeffrey. Seeing the seminar leader on stage commanding the room and cleansing hearts and minds, Ash saw a glimpse of his future. "I can do this," he said to his coworker. He signed up for the seminar, saw his future, and ran home to tell Indira.